Chapter 11 Human Relationships and Related Ideas. Affiliation. What does the word affiliation mean? Affiliation is defined in the glossary of Taylor's Social Psychology as the basic human tendency to seek the company of other people. However, affiliation is defined for the ideas and models presented in this paper as the tendency for human beings to interact with others. That is, interaction with others and affiliation have the same meaning in this paper. This more generalized definition applies to most, if not all, types of affiliation between human beings, such as the interactions between parent-child, husband-wife, boyfriend-girlfriend, doctor-patient, therapist-client, employer-employee, instructor-student, salesperson-customer-friends, acquaintances, and the casual conversation between strangers. Question: why do people affiliate with others? Is this a genetic predisposition or is it learned? It is learned from childhood throughout life, partly as a result of genetic limitations and genetic qualities of human beings. As a result of this learning process, the individual builds up positive associations on an intellectual and emotional level in relation to interacting with other people. This happens as explained in the following paragraphs. Genetic limitations that facilitate interaction with others. Human beings do not have the genetically programmed instincts to assist them in obtaining the necessities of life. They must learn how to survive. Much of this learning happens as a result of interaction with other people. In the early years of life, before an individual is old enough to have mastered the fundamentals of survival, he or she must depend on others. This dependency in effect results in rewards, such as food, shelter, reassurance, protection from enemies, etc. That is, the human infant and child cannot survive without ongoing affiliation with parents or other primary caregivers. As the child matures, he or she is taught to interact with children, teachers, and other adults. To gain the knowledge needed to survive throughout life, the human being must learn a tremendous amount of information. The learning process often requires interaction with other people, which is especially true in childhood. As the child matures, the young individual learns that he or she must often interact with others to satisfy basic needs and goals, such as playing in childhood and earning a living in adulthood. People also learn throughout life that the company of others can be reassuring, especially in fearful or anxiety-provoking situations. The company of others can distract them from their own anxiety-provoking thoughts. Genetic qualities that facilitate interaction with others. Certain genetic factors facilitate affiliation between human beings by means of learning. The powerful human brain is the result of genetics, which makes learning a tremendous amount of information possible. This includes the learning of language, which certainly facilitates affiliation between people. The structures comprising the human speech mechanism, such as the vocal cords, related nerves, and muscles, are also genetic qualities, which facilitate affiliation between people by means of learning to communicate with language. The variability of the human animal to learn can facilitate affiliation with other human beings. The reason for this is learning often requires interaction with others, and as previously stated, the learning is necessary for survival. The powerful brain also makes complicated and/or massive work projects possible, and such projects require interaction of a number of workers. The genetically determined sexual desires of human beings obviously can facilitate interaction with other people. The adolescent quickly learns that he or she must affiliate with many people to find a suitable mate. This often involves large friendship groups and many social activities. The above paragraphs can be summed up by stating the following. Affiliation is a learned behavior pattern that is facilitated by genetic limitations and genetic qualities of the human animal. The individual learns to affiliate because it is necessary for survival and it is rewarding to do so. This learning process results in positive associations on an intellectual and emotional level in relation to interacting with others. A general example of an intellectual association is a person learns that certain things are too difficult to do without the help of other people. The mature individual learned that he or she cannot obtain the necessities and luxuries of life without affiliating with others. Emotional associations are a certain type of learning, such as the individual learns that other people can be fun, reassuring, and can reduce anxiety. the result of the many positive experiences that an individual has during the early years of life interacting with others, can lead to positive associations and facilitate affiliation in later life. This can happen even when the affiliation has no practical necessity. Of course, there are some individuals that have learned to minimize affiliation as a result of negative experiences with others. Since affiliation is essentially the result of learning, it becomes apparent that some people might learn to affiliate more than others. Some individuals desire many interactions with others, and some prefer to be alone much of the time. The way people affiliate is also a learned response. A person will affiliate with others in ways that are unique to his or her personality. Thus, from the above paragraphs, it is apparent that affiliation is a general need that must be satisfied if the individual is going to survive, reproduce, and raise the next generation. Since this need is so essential, each culture has rules, pathways, and methods to facilitate affiliation between people. The concept of culture itself is essentially the product of affiliation. The same is true with society in general. Its components are products of affiliation. This includes the food production system, the manufacturer of material goods, the transportation system, government, military, the legal structure, the police, religious institutions, and the educational system. From the ideas presented in this paper thus far, it is apparent that there are different types of affiliation, such as parent-child, employer-employee, lovers, etc. These variations in affiliation essentially relate to the type of relationship that people have with each other. Relationships are discussed in detail under the heading that follows. Generally, each of these types of affiliation have formal and/or informal rules governing the interactions. These rules are essentially laid down by culture and society. The formal rules are either part of the legal rules or the written rules of an organization. An example of such rules are the legal requirements of parents in relation to the way they care for their children. These rules include child support and prohibit cruel punishment and sexual activity with the child. An example of informal rules of affiliation are the proper ways of treating a friend. Generally, this includes some degree of loyalty, revealing information that is more personal than would be revealed to acquaintances, a greater degree of tolerance for weaknesses, a general concern and some responsibility for the well-being of the friend. From the ideas presented under this heading, it becomes apparent that there are two basic categories of affiliation needs. One type is practical, which is affiliation to obtain the necessities and luxuries of life. I am calling this type of affiliation economic affiliation. Note the term economic is used in a very general sense in this text. Thus, economics refers to all the needs a person has that relate to food, shelter, goods, services, education, entertainment, luxuries, as well as employment and money. The other type of affiliation need is an emotionally based desire to interact with others. I am calling this type of affiliation emotionally based affiliation. Under certain circumstances, the two types of affiliation can be partly or totally satisfied by one or more personal relationship partners. For example, all of the economic affiliation needs of children are generally provided by the parents. In addition, at least part of the emotionally based affiliation needs are usually satisfied by the parents. Something similar can be found in traditional marriages in relation to the needs the husband provides for the woman. However, very often the economic affiliation needs of adults are achieved through non-personal relationships of a business nature. An understanding of the above concepts, economic and emotionally based affiliation, are important for the discussion that follows under the next heading. Emotionally based affiliation deficiency. Loneliness and economic affiliation deficiency. Often people fail to have their affiliation needs satisfied. This deficiency in affiliation can be divided into two categories: emotionally based affiliation deficiency, which is loneliness as the term is defined for this model. The other category is economic affiliation deficiency, which relates to the affiliation needed to obtain the necessities and luxuries of life. The following concepts of loneliness and economic affiliation deficiency are further delineated in the following seven paragraphs. Loneliness. Loneliness is defined in the glossary of Taylor's Social Psychology as the psychological discomfort we feel when our social relationships lack some essential feature. This deficit may be quantitative too few relationships or qualitative unsatisfying relationships. For the ideas and models presented in this paper, the term loneliness was defined as a failure to satisfy the emotionally based affiliation needs. This will result in the psychological discomfort mentioned in the definition in Taylor's Social Psychology. The failure to satisfy the emotionally based affiliation needs can be the result of a deficiency in the quantity or quality of the affiliations that an individual obtains. For example, a deficiency in quantity means the person does not have enough interaction with others. A deficiency in quality means that the interactions with others are not emotionally satisfying. The ability to satisfy emotionally based affiliation needs varies with the individual and his or her social environment. Some people have better social and relationship skills than others, which certainly can reduce the chances of being lonely. Some people are in environments that make social interaction easy, and other individuals are in environments that make social interaction difficult or almost impossible. Perhaps the best way to reduce loneliness is to improve your human relations skills by practicing in a friendly social environment. Of course, individuals have different levels of emotionally based affiliation needs. Some people have a much greater need to affiliate than others. Thus, the amount of affiliation that a person engages in does not determine whether or not he or she will feel lonely. A person that has an emotional need for much affiliation may feel lonely even if he or she spends much of the time interacting with others. A person that has a very low level of affiliation need may not feel lonely, even if he or she spends almost all his or her time alone. Economic affiliation deficiency. Just as there can be a failure to satisfy the emotionally based affiliation needs, there can be a failure to satisfy the economic affiliation needs, which are needed to obtain the necessities and luxuries of life. As stated above, I am calling this concept economic affiliation deficiency. This concept can also be defined as a deficiency in practical affiliations or ties to other human beings and their organizations that are needed to obtain goods, services, and employment. In adult life, economic affiliation deficiency often relates to a failure to obtain an adequate quantity or quality of the various business relationships a person needs to obtain satisfactory employment, goods, and services. The above can also be satisfied by certain categories of close personal relationships, such as is found in the family. This is especially the case for children, adolescents, and women in traditional marriages. Thus, practical loneliness in some cases can also be related to a failure to obtain an adequate quantity and/or quality of family bonding. This can also involve failures of communication between family members. In general, economic affiliation deficiency can be the result of dysfunctional ways the individual affiliates with others in relation to obtaining goods, services, and employment. The problem can also include lack of skills in contacting and communicating effectively with individuals that can satisfy practical affiliation needs. Individuals who experience economic affiliation deficiency may or may not feel lonely, but such individuals will obviously have financial difficulties, especially in adult life. However, most types of poverty are probably not primarily caused by economic affiliation deficiency. The primary causes are usually lack of education and a network including the family that are too deficient in financial resources and power to help its members succeed financially. The utility and theoretical value of the model. The reader may question the purpose of the model and the two categories of affiliation deficiency. There are both practical and theoretical reasons for the division. An individual can be deficient in the social skills that relate to one type of affiliation and be quite strong in the other type. For example, a person may be very skillful in obtaining and maintaining close personal friendships, but may not know how to obtain and maintain the connections needed for minimum economic success. Such an individual may not be lonely, but he or she will have problems in obtaining the necessities and luxuries of life. The opposite example is an individual that is skilled in obtaining and maintaining the connections needed for a high degree of economic success. However, the hypothetical individual in this example does not know how to obtain and maintain the personal relationships he or she seeks and desires with others. Such an individual is likely to feel lonely. Of course, There are individuals that are deficient in the skills that relate to both economic and emotionally based affiliation. However, it is important to understand that the two types of deficiency relate to weaknesses in different categories of social skills. This understanding can help with correcting such problems in real-life situations. Positive self-fulfilling prophecy. Self-disclosure and related ideas. Revealing information about the self is an important part of affiliation and relationship development. Generally, for people to relate in a close personal way, they need information about each other. People need information about others for many reasons. Some of the reasons are emotionally based and some are quite practical, which become apparent in the following examples. We may want to know if the individuals we interact with had similar experiences and/or feelings as we had. We may want to know if they have similar interests as ours. We may be interested in knowing how they feel about us, other people in the world in general. We might be interested in learning if they are especially sensitive to certain topics, so we can avoid offending them. We may be concerned about their past behavior and personality for reasons of our own personal security. That is, we may be interested in knowing if they are honest, trustworthy, mentally stable, and safe to interact with. It may be quite important to a young woman to know the academic, occupational, and financial status of a potential mate. In modern times, this information might also be important to a man looking for a marriage partner, because it may reveal if the woman can provide a financial contribution to a marriage if one develops. Thus, revealing of personal information provides a general picture about the other person, which is quite useful in relating to the individual. Thus, self-disclosure is quite practical, useful, and necessary. However, under various psychological, social and cultural conditions, the amount of self-disclosure that is considered appropriate varies. That is, how much to reveal and when to reveal it, from the perspective of appropriateness, is not the same under all conditions. There are so many variations that it is certainly not possible to delineate all the different conditions, but it is feasible to give a few general examples. There are individual differences between people. Some people are more open and ready to reveal and or listen to personal information. Other people are less interested in the personal information of others. Some people simply do not like to reveal personal information about themselves. Such individuals may consider personal questions a form of intrusion into their personal business. There are people who are embarrassed about their past, and there are individuals who are proud of their achievements and want to reveal this information. There are also some gender differences. There is a small tendency for women to want to reveal more personal information than men. Under some social conditions, it is quite appropriate to reveal much personal information about the self, such as when talking to a therapist, when talking to a close friend, when talking to a member of the opposite sex who is a serious prospect for marriage. However, under some social conditions, it is less appropriate to reveal personal information, such as in non-personal business relationships, in a party involving business associates, and in job interviews. There are cultural differences in revealing information about the self in the United States and Japan. Americans will reveal more information, and the information generally will be provided at an earlier point in the development of the relationship than it would be in Japanese culture. Americans will expect information to be revealed at a relatively early point in the development of a relationship. As a result, Americans often ask personal questions, which would be considered inappropriate in Japanese culture. For example, on the first introduction, it is rather common for Americans to ask, "What do you do for a living and where did you go to school?" Three general models of human relationships. The term relationship is defined for the models presented in this paper as two individuals that affiliate on an ongoing basis. This definition and the models that follow essentially apply to all types of relationships, such as husband-wife, parent-child, doctor-patient, student-instructor, friendships, etc. There are two types of relationships according to the models presented in this text, which are personal and non-personal. In personal relationships, the ongoing affiliation is motivated by a number of factors, some of which have an emotional nature, such as affection, liking, love, and mutually shared sexual desires. There may or may not be other factors holding the personal relationship together, such as money, services, etc. Examples are obvious and include parent-child, husband-wife, lovers and friends. In non-personal relationship, the ongoing affiliation is generally motivated by a relatively small number of factors. Often the primary motivation for the affiliation is rooted in one factor, such as the exchange of money for goods or services. The individuals in such a relationship may or may not have other factors that hold the relationship together. They might like each other or enjoy each other's company, but if the primary factor, such as money, is eliminated, the relationship quickly ends. Examples of such a relationship are business relationships, teacher-student, doctor-patient and therapist-client. It might be obvious from the above paragraphs and from personal experience that non-personal relationships often have some of the elements of personal relationships. For example, people involved in a business relationship may like each other. They may feel genuine concern and affection for their business associate. They might enjoy each other's company and spend their lunch hour together. The same is true with personal relationships. Many personal relationships have some of the qualities of non-personal relationships. For example, in some marriages, a husband might provide a high level of financial support for his wife, with an unstated understanding that she is to provide housekeeping, childcare, and sexual services. Such marriages might break up if the husband's income is reduced or eliminated as a result of unemployment. Note, the above is not meant to be a typical description of marriage. Three models of human relationships are presented in the following paragraphs. The first one is based on exchange theory, the second one is based on learning theory, and the final model is based on theoretical bonds that hold a relationship together. The three models apply to both personal and non-personal relationships as these concepts were defined above. This model is based on exchange theory. Both personal and non-personal relationships involve exchange of various factors. In the case of non-personal relationships, the exchange is usually quite obvious. Usually, goods or services are exchanged for money. Such exchanges are usually mathematically precise. In personal relationships, exchange is not mathematically precise. The exchange may not be obvious. The factors that are exchanged can be intangible, such as affection, love, smiles, hugs, and compliments. The exchange can also involve tangible entities, such as money, clothes, and food. The exchange in personal relationships can also involve services, such as the services a mother provides for her children or the housekeeping services a housewife provides for her husband. Also, there are costs in maintaining the relationship that are consciously or unconsciously figured in with the rewards obtained from the exchange. That is, the costs are consciously or unconsciously subtracted from the gains that are received from the exchange. The equality of the exchange is the result of the perception of the people involved in the relationship. When the exchange is perceived by one party as grossly unequal and unfair, the relationship may change to re-establish a more equal exchange, or it might be ended by one or both partners. However, if the exchange is perceived as moderately unequal, many people will continue in the relationship. This is likely to be especially true when the costs of maintaining the relationship is not too great or if the relationship is relatively satisfying. Also, people may stay in a relationship that is unequal if they do not believe they can find a better relationship. The intangible factors that are exchanged in personal relationships are very different from tangible factors, such as goods, services, and money. The intangible factors generally can only be supplied by a specific person. For example, the exchange of love, affection, smiles, and hugs obviously cannot be provided by any individual. They only have value when provided by a specific person. However, tangible factors, such as goods, services, and money, can be provided by just about anyone who is willing to provide such tangible entities. This model is based on learning theory. Another way of looking at both personal and non-personal relationships is the partners in the relationship learn to affiliate on an ongoing basis. That is, the individuals learn that the ongoing affiliation is rewarding in one or more ways. This maintains the relationship. Sometimes, as the relationship changes with time, one or both partners find that the relationship is no longer rewarding or that it changed to an emotionally painful relationship. This is also a type of learning, which may lead to a change in the relationship or a termination of it. This model is based on theoretical bonds that hold the relationship together. Still another way of looking at relationships is they are a union of two individuals that are held together by bonds. The bonds are of two types, positive and negative. Positive bonds are the rewards people receive in the relationship, such as affection, reassurance, money, goods, services, etc. The negative bonds are the various unpleasant consequences that the individual would experience if the relationship is terminated. This includes the emotional pain that is often associated with the ending of a personal relationship. The typical relationship is probably held together by both positive and negative bonds. Some relationships may have significantly more of one type of bond. Some personal relationships are primarily held together by negative bonds. The relationship itself can be quite unpleasant, but the anticipation or thought of ending the relationship is more painful than maintaining it. This explains why some people stay in personal relationships that are quite unpleasant. Thus, the three models cover all types of relationships in general. Under the following three headings, specific types of relationships will be discussed, such as romantic relationships, parent-child relationships, and friendships. Romantic relationships. A romantic relationship is defined for the following ideas and models as an ongoing affiliation between two individuals that includes sexually related activities. The primary categories are single and married couples. A theoretical model of romantic relationships based on imprinting. Romantic relationships in a certain sense are similar to the imprinting that takes place in certain species of young animals toward a parent. That is, there is a mechanism in some animals, such as ducks, that result in a strong bond between the parent, which is not based on a simple reward and punishment process. The animal will follow the parent around even if the parent does not provide food protection or anything else. That is, the animal will follow the parent even if there is no reason to do so. The imprinting response in animals can be so irrational that the animal can be imprinted by an experimenter to an inanimate object, which is done by exposing the newborn animal to the object at the right point in time. A process that has some similarities to the imprinting in animals appears to be involved with romantic relationships in human beings. Of course, the process that takes place in romantic relationships is not identical to the imprinting that takes place in animals, but it is similar to it in certain ways. The primary point is there is a process involved in romantic relationships that has some of the properties of imprinting. I am calling this process romantic imprinting. A common phrase that people use to describe a process that is more or less similar or identical is falling in love. And from a negative perspective, perhaps some would describe it as falling into quicksand. Romantic imprinting usually involves all of the following. Romantic imprinting takes place by romantic interaction of the partners over a period of time. The romantic imprinting process involves various types of sexual activity and/or the thought fantasy of sexual activity with the partner. This is motivated by sexual gratification. There can also be many other motivating factors involved, such as a belief that the partner is an ideal mate. The time interval needed for the romantic imprinting to take place is usually in the range of days, weeks, or months. However, there are situations where it takes place in much longer or shorter time intervals. A strong sexual attraction develops toward the partner. This is especially true in the beginning of the relationship. The attraction strengthens the bonds holding the relationship together. This attraction generally increases in the early stages of the relationship. After the relationship matures, the sexual attraction usually decreases. This can also be stated in terms of passionate love and compagnonate love, which is described in Taylor's social psychology. Passionate love is the highly emotional and sexual feelings that are present in the beginning of a romantic relationship. As the relationship matures, the passionate love may be reduced and replaced with compagnonate love, which is less passionate, but perhaps more practical. This type of love involves affection, caring, warmth, understanding, and acceptance of the partner's limitations. A strong generalized attachment to a partner develops. This attachment is not based on a simple concept of rewards and punishments once the relationship is established. In this respect, it is similar to the imprinting in animals. The attachment, of course, will be strengthened by rewards. It might also be weakened by pain stemming directly from the relationship. The romantic bonds in human beings may also be strengthened in some cases by the anticipation of pain that would result from breaking up the relationship. The bonds might also be strengthened or weakened in some cases by the perceived chances of finding another partner if the relationship is ended. If an individual perceives that there are few partners available to him or her, the bonds of the relationship might be strengthened. This is especially the case if the perceived choices are inferior to the current partner. The opposite situation might weaken the bonds holding the relationship together. The relationship can be irrational in some cases. This is also found in imprinting in animals. Some romantic relationships can be highly unrewarding and painful, but the partners may maintain the relationship for a while or permanently in spite of the discomfort. Higher brain centers, awareness, and at least some logical thinking are involved in this respect. The romantic imprinting is quite different from the animal imprinting. The human being that gets involved with a romantic relationship has a human brain, which evaluates and makes conscious decisions. People in romantic relationships may receive many rewards by maintaining the relationship. Such rewards can include money, companionship, sexual gratification, the opportunity to raise a family, etc. Thus, there is some logical thinking involved with romantic imprinting. However, as already pointed out, there can be irrational thinking and behavior involved with relationships that are held together by romantic imprinting. For example, it is very difficult to end such relationships, regardless of whether they are pleasant or painful. It can even be difficult to end romantically bonded relationships when there is only emotional pain involved. This can be the case even if both parties agree that the relationship should be ended. Of course, the above is not always the case. The selection process for romantic relationships and related ideas. Which do you think makes for happier individuals and more satisfying social arrangements? The Western notion of romantic love or other arrangements, such as arranged marriages, multiple marriages, etc.? Some answers to this question and related ideas are presented in the following 24 paragraphs. Note there are many exceptions to the ideas expressed in the following paragraphs. Some of these exceptions are explained in footnotes. The reader should understand the necessity of the relatively large number of footnotes in the text that follows. Often, the relative functionality or dysfunctionality of a cultural component, such as a mate selection method, is determined by psychological, social, cultural, and environmental factors. That is, under certain conditions the cultural component may be highly functional, but under other conditions it may be quite dysfunctional. This idea can be used to examine the above question about romantic love and the mate selection process. However, it is first necessary to discuss the modern Western process of romantic love and mate selection, which is done in the following 17 paragraphs. The simplest description of the mate selection system in our society is meeting an appropriate partner, dating, falling in love and marrying, which is all based on free choice. As will be illustrated in the following paragraphs, this is an extreme oversimplification. This oversimplification is especially apparent when we consider the many changes that have taken place in our society since the 60s. In Western society, the mate selection process is perceived to be the result of the individual choice of the partners. In reality, often the parents and peer group influence the choice of mate selection, but the individuals involved may not be aware of the influencing dynamics on their choice. Even the media, such as television, movies, magazines, etc., probably have a significant influence on the mate selection process in modern Western society. That is, the individual learns from parents, friends, television, movies, magazines, books, and even from school, the type of person who will be considered an appropriate romantic partner for him or her. The individual usually finds an appropriate romantic partner by socializing with people who are also looking for partners. To facilitate this process, there are many social events that are more or less created with this purpose in mind. There are school dances, discotheques, singles bars, discussion groups for single people, personal growth workshops primarily prepared for singles, outings for singles, vacation resorts designed for single people, membership clubs for singles, lectures for singles, dating services and personal ads. Most of these events attract people in one or two age groups, and the people are usually in approximately the same social class. There are, of course, other ways that singles meet. Some people meet by being fixed up with a potential date, with the assistance of friends or relatives. Private and semi-private parties are often a place where people find dates. New methods of meeting dates are periodically developed. Two recently created methods are telephone discussion services for singles and communications with the computer through the internet. People, of course, also meet in places that are not specifically meant for finding dates. Sometimes people find dates by selecting eligible individuals that live in the same building or neighborhood. High school and college contain primarily single people. Thus, school serves as a series of singles events for some people. The work environment also serves as a place to meet potential mates. However, with recent changes in values, the workplace and even the school environment might be risky places to attempt to meet a potential mate. Such an attempt can be misinterpreted as sexual harassment. This is especially true for higher status males in a managerial or in an instructional role. However, there is usually some risk-taking involved no matter where single people choose to meet. A general dynamic that is involved with the mate selection process in our society is risk-taking. This is true for both sexes. The male may face some embarrassing rejections, which can range from a polite no to a nasty refusal, such as "Are you crazy?" The refusal could be stated in an especially loud voice so all can hear. The risk-taking for the female is far greater. Of course, she may face some embarrassing rejections also. Some women in our modern times either hint or ask for a date or a phone number. However, the primary risk that women face in the mate selection process in our society is not simply related to embarrassing rejections. Often people date total strangers, who do not know each other's acquaintances, friends or parents. In such situations, the woman has no way of knowing if she is dating a man that might rape her or cause other physical harm. There are risks that involve honesty. The dating partner may not know if he or she should reveal certain facts about himself or herself or when to reveal them. Some dating partners may tell false information in relation to education, occupation, and financial status. Such information is usually a primary concern of the woman, but it can also be a concern for males. Other problems related to honesty include the individual may not consider his or her date a serious potential for a romantic partner, may have other relationships or be married. Another category of risk is unwanted pregnancy. Most birth control methods are far from perfect. Some women forget to use birth control. Men often do not use condoms, which can fail as a result of punctures. The biggest risk for sexually active singles involves the possibility of exposure to a sexually transmitted disease. AIDS is, of course, the greatest risk in this category, because the disease is not curable and often fatal. This risk has changed the sexual behavior of many single men and women in Western society. Risks are certainly not the only difficulty that the singles face. In our society, it is necessary to compete for a mate. An individual's physical looks, financial status, occupational level, educational attainment, intelligence, social skills, and just about everything else counts in this competition. Of course, each individual places his or her own value on the qualities that he or she personally desires in a mate. However, those who are weak in certain qualities may have a difficult time finding a romantic partner. There are some people who fail to find a suitable mate. Many people are very aware of the desirable qualities in the competition for mates with those qualities. However, there are people who have no awareness of the competitive dynamics and they find suitable partners with relative ease. But the high standards in competition cause serious problems for some individuals. There are people who do not have enough of the qualities that are valued in the mate selection competition within the subculture and social class they belong to. An example is a man from an upper-middle-class environment who has little education and earns much less money than his upper-middle-class friends. These people may have to remain single or change the places they search for a mate. They may also have to change the standards they use for mate selection. However, most people eventually adjust to the choices that are available to them. This adjustment can result in a preference for a mate with a similar level of qualities. Some examples are as follows. A person who did not go to college might decide that college graduates are too intellectual, picky and bossy and do not make good mates, resulting in a preference for people who did not go to college. A homely person might decide that attractive people are not good mates because they can easily cheat, resulting in a preference for people who are homely. A person that is not very intellectual or intelligent might define intelligence in terms that are different from the intellectual's definition. The less intelligent person might consider intelligence in terms of being street smart and knowledgeable about sports, resulting in a preference for potential mates that meet such criteria. Members of the opposite sex who have superior qualities may also be perceived as not very interesting, snobbish and unfriendly. The reason for this is that such individuals with superior qualities are generally not interested in forming a romantic relationship with the person with lesser qualities. Thus, they may come across to the person with lesser qualities in the undesirable terms described above. This can lead the individual with lesser qualities to prefer others who are similar to himself or herself. Some people adjust by simply realizing that they have the best chance of obtaining a mate who has approximately a similar level of positive and negative qualities as theirs. Such people may conduct their search accordingly. However, there are members of both sexes that pursue mates who have qualities superior to theirs. In this respect, women and men are likely to have different experiences as explained in the following two paragraphs. Note: keep in mind that the dynamics explained in the following two paragraphs do not always manifest. There are many exceptions. If a female pursues males who have qualities that are superior to hers, sooner or later she will probably find a man who will form a romantic relationship with her. However, the relationship may not be considered serious by the male. He may consider it as a casual relationship that offers sexual gratification. He may continue his search for a mate that he considers appropriate for a permanent relationship. Such a man may even be married in some cases. All of the above may not be revealed, but the female might sense as the relationship develops over time that the man is not truly interested in a serious relationship with her. Males who find themselves in a subculture and social environment where they are pursuing women that have qualities that are superior to theirs will usually have experiences that are quite different from women under similar circumstances. They will usually be rejected rather quickly. If they persist in their search, they will probably sooner or later find a woman interested in them as a platonic friend. The male may continue the relationship, dating the woman, with a hope, which is often futile, that it will develop into a romantic relationship. The differences expressed in the two paragraphs above are related to a difference in sexual values between men and women. Men are often, but certainly not always, more willing to get sexually involved. However, there are of course many men in our society that have highly conservative sexual values and would not be willing to involve themselves in a casual romantic relationship. The opposite is also true. There are women who are very casual about sex, and they may have sex with a male friend, with no intention of forming a serious or ongoing romantic relationship with him. Probably the individuals that are most likely to find a mate and have a successful relationship are individuals that search for a romantic partner that has positive and negative qualities, values, beliefs, interests and goals that are similar to theirs. This is especially the case if they like their own qualities. Most people probably more or less fall into this category, individual selecting a mate based on similarity as they mature to the point where they are seriously searching for a marriage partner. Thus, from the above it is apparent that most people adjust to the problems, risks, rejections and other difficulties of the Western mate selection system. Most single people sooner or later meet one or more individuals that they get romantically bonded to. The romantic bonding develops generally as stated in the previous discussion of a theoretical model of romantic imprinting, which is briefly summarized in the following sentence. Various types of sexual activity and/or thoughts of such activity with a specific partner over a period of time often leads to the sensation that people call romantic love in Western society. When romantic love develops, the couple might decide to marry. In more recent times, in Western society, alternatives to marriage are also considered by people in love, such as moving into the same living quarters without marrying. This is sometimes done for one of the following reasons: as a permanent arrangement, as a test of marriage compatibility, as a temporary arrangement until the couple decides to break up. Another alternative to marriage in modern Western society is maintaining a boyfriend-girlfriend relationship in separate living quarters, with no intention of marriage. A less common version of this, which is only acceptable by a minority of the singles population, is multiple relationships. For example, a woman might have several boyfriends that she is sexually involved with. This is probably less common than it was at one time, because of the manifestation of the AIDS virus. As implied above, there are many types of relationships in our modern society, besides a traditional marriage. This can cause a major problem for people searching for a relationship. Both males and females have no way of knowing what a potential date wants unless it is honestly revealed. There are males, especially those who might pursue women in singles bars, who want sex for one night. And there might be some women with similar goals. This is probably much less common than it was in the 70s and 80s, because of the manifestation of AIDS. There are people who are looking for a casual romantic relationship. Some people on the singles scene are simply looking for friends. Others want a monogamous relationship without marriage. And there are people who are hoping to find a member of the opposite sex to marry and raise a family. Much of what has been discussed, such as dating, marriage and raising a family, obviously cost money. Traditionally, the male would pay the bills. In recent years, there has been some changes in this regard. Women sometimes pay their share in the dating process. This is more likely to be the case in platonic relationships and less likely to be so in true romantic relationships. However, even in romantic dating relationships, the woman may contribute some money toward the date, which may be just a fraction of the bill. In marriage, the male is expected to support the family, but a financial contribution from the woman as a result of her employment is rather common. However, often, but certainly not always, the male is expected to be the primary source of money for all types of romantic relationships. This is especially true for a marriage and family that include children. If the male cannot provide more than 50% of the financial support in a romantic relationship, which includes marriage, the relationship is often, but certainly not always, ended by the woman. The reasons for this may or may not be directly caused by financial factors. That is, in some cases, the emotional problems stemming from the economic difficulties, which can result in hostile arguments, might be the actual cause of the termination of the relationship. However, women usually consider the earning power of a man a primary factor, especially in the upper working, middle and upper middle class categories. This is usually quite obvious in social events intended for singles that already completed school. One of the first questions that a woman often asks a man she just met is, "What do you do for a living?" In some cases, this may be motivated by a desire to maintain a conversation, but the question also has the practical value of assessing the man's financial status. The interest in financial status is probably greatest when the woman is looking for a serious relationship, such as marriage. The most common relationship in our society is generally thought to be monogamous. However, if you examine statistics of single and married people in our society, an interesting conclusion is apparent. Most people have more than one romantic relationship in a lifetime. Some people have many romantic relationships throughout their lives. Thus, an accurate description of the most common type of relationship in our society is serial monogamy. That is, it is quite common for people to have multiple sexual partners over a lifetime, but most people engage in sexual activity at a given period of their life with only one partner. The above is quite obvious when we examine the behavior of single individuals and the divorce rate of married couples. Of course, there are also many people in our society that find one partner and stay with that partner for life. Thus, the Western notion of the mating process, romantic love and mate selection as it is actually carried out, with a small number of exceptions, can be summarized as follows. It is either serial monogamy or monogamy, with the partners choosing their own mates, which is usually based on romantic love, with their choices based on the influence that is provided by society at large. Question: how functional is this Western system of romantic love and mate selection? From the above paragraphs, it is apparent that there are some dysfunctional elements involved in the system. A more precise answer is it can be quite functional for some people, and quite dysfunctional for others. I will summarize the dysfunctional and functional aspects of the Western system in the following two lists. These lists also contain a functional-dysfunctional comparison between the Western method and a system of arranged marriages by relatives, such as exists in some Oriental countries. The dysfunctional aspects of the modern mate selection system include all of the following. People making poor choices in relation to mate selection. Romantic love can interfere with a person's judgment, which can result in making a poor choice in relation to selecting a partner. This is especially the case with younger people, who do not have the experience and maturity to make good decisions. This difficulty would be solved by a system of arranged marriages. Out-of-wedlock pregnancy. This is a major problem in our society. It is especially serious for the less educated individuals, who are also younger in age. This difficulty would most likely be eliminated by arranged marriages, especially if marriage was started early in life. The emotional trauma from breaking up long-term relationships, such as seen in some divorces, this can cause serious psychological difficulties in some cases for the separating partners. The separation may trigger or cause a serious case of depression or other psychological disorder. It can also cause emotional problems for children in some cases. This would not necessarily be solved by arranged marriages. It is possible that it would even increase as a result of arranged marriages, such as if the matches were poorly made. It might be reduced by a system that encouraged better choices, marrying at an older age, correcting relationship problems with counseling, and a system that discouraged divorce. Children growing up in single-parent households. Children usually develop better when there are two parents. Single-parent households often result in poverty and lack of supervision. This lack of supervision in single-parent households can lead to an increase in crime as the children mature. Much of the difficulties associated with single-parent households would be solved by a system of arranged marriages. There may be still some single-parent households, as the result of death or divorce, but the numbers would probably be greatly reduced. Psychological difficulties stemming from the system, such as failures to find a mate, rejection and divorce. Single people must learn to cope with rejection. Some singles receive a huge amount of rejection. This can cause psychological problems, such as low self-esteem and depression. This difficulty can probably be reduced or eliminated by a system that involved arranged marriages. This would probably be especially true if the matches were carefully made, and the system discouraged divorce. Embarrassment of facing rejection and competition. This is a relatively minor problem compared to the other dysfunctions mentioned. However, it can affect some people more than others. It can stop some individuals from searching for a mate. As implied above, it may have insignificant psychological problems for some people. Not knowing the kind of relationship that your dating partner wants. Of course, this is probably one of the less severe problems, because it is possible to ask. However, often before such information can be politely asked, the individuals must invest time in at least one date. There is always the risk that a partner will lie, such as a man telling a woman that he is looking for marriage, with the hope of obtaining premarital sex. This difficulty would obviously be eliminated by a system of arranged marriages. The difficulties of dating strangers. This can be especially difficult for women. A female can be risking rape and/or physical harm in her dating efforts. Even if no such harm ever manifests, the woman may suffer a considerable amount of fear and emotional stress over the potential hazard. This difficulty would also be eliminated by a system of arranged marriages. Ambiguity about proper sexual values and behavior. The various cultures, subcultures, and other divisions of our society have different norms and values about proper sexual behavior. The most conservative segments of our society, such as certain religious groups, do not consider any sexual activity before marriage acceptable. The opposite extreme is found in some single scene segments, where if there is no sexual activity involving the genitals by the third date, the assumption may be that one or both parties are not interested in forming a relationship. This assumption is probably much less common than it once was, because of the manifestation of AIDS. Many cautious couples wait until the relationship is developed and then both partners have an AIDS test before the sexual aspect of their relationship starts. The ambiguity about proper sexual behavior can be a problem for both men and women. If a potential partner acts too soon, it may lead to the termination of a developing relationship, which is most likely to happen if the man acts too soon. If the woman makes herself sexually available too early, she may be rejected as a serious relationship partner by some men. This difficulty would be eliminated by a system of arranged marriages that incorporated a single set of sexual values. In spite of the dysfunctions of the Western method of mate selection, there are also many functional elements which manifest for some people. Basically, the mate selection method in our society offers much choice. People who make carefully thought-out, intelligent choices may find the system highly functional. This functionality includes all of the following. A feeling of free choice. The emotional feeling of being free is strongly valued in our society. This includes the individual's freedom to choose a partner of his or her own choice. It also involves the other choices presented under the next entry on this list. Free choice would be eliminated with most systems of arranged marriages. The decision of whom to marry, and even when to marry, are usually made by the parents. A choice of the type of relationship, such as boyfriend-girlfriend living separately, platonic relationships, multiple sexual relationships, living together, and marriage. Everybody is not emotionally and financially prepared or suitable for marriage. Some people have a philosophy that is incompatible with marriage and long-term commitment. Other people simply are not emotionally stable enough to maintain a marriage or other long-term commitment. There are even people who are afraid of sex or cannot find a romantic partner. There are also people who do not want to or cannot form any type of long-term relationship. In our modern society, nobody is forced into any type of relationship. Most people have the potential to find a partner for almost any type of relationship, such as the relationships listed above. The freedom gives everybody a chance to make the most realistic and best choice for themselves. Most individuals who want a long-term commitment, such as marriage, succeed in finding a partner. The choice of the type of relationship would be eliminated by arranged marriages. In a system that only allowed arranged marriages, some people who are not emotionally or financially prepared for marriage might be forced into marriage. This would be quite dysfunctional, and it would most likely lead to divorce. A system that allowed parents to arrange marriages would leave some people without any relationship if the parents thought they were unsuitable for marriage. This would be especially unfair if their offspring felt differently or if the young person improved with maturity. When a person chooses their own partner, the relationship might work out better. If an emotionally mature individual chooses his or her own partner, the long-term outcome will probably be more successful. This may be especially true for marriage. This assumption is based on a study that was cited in Taylor's Social Psychology. Specifically, this study, Xiao and White 1990, involved the change in the marriage selection method in modern China from arranged marriages to marriages where the partners had more choice in the mate selection process. Women who had more choice reported a higher level of marital satisfaction according to the study, when compared to women who had less choice in the selection of their husbands. Women that had more of a choice in the selection process were less likely to divorce than women who had little choice in the selection of their mates. The opportunity to end undesirable relationships in a relatively easy manner. Many relationships turn out to be quite unsuccessful, unpleasant, and even dangerous for one partner, which is usually the woman. Some relationships can even be quite destructive for the children. The solution in our modern society is relatively simple: end the relationship. If it is a marriage, there is the option of annulment for new marriages, separation, or divorce. Divorced people can usually find another partner and remarry. This is even true for people with children. this option would probably be eliminated by most strict systems of arranged marriages, unless such a system made divorce acceptable and relatively easy. If marriage was arranged by the parents, the individual may have great difficulty marrying after divorce if his or her parents were deceased. Choice to raise a family without marriage. Many people in our society do not like this option. However, it is an option that some people take. Some women cannot find a partner that is suitable for the long-term emotional and financial responsibilities of marriage. They want to have children, and they raise their family out of wedlock. Some women get pregnant, and their boyfriend deserts them. They have the option to raise a child, which is far more acceptable in our society than it was once. This option would be eliminated by a strict system that involved arranged marriages and did not allow for alternative methods of child rearing. However, the option would be needed less, because it might be almost guaranteed that a woman who wanted to raise a family would have a husband chosen for her very early in life. A choice of arranged marriages. Arranged marriages are certainly not common in our society. However, there is no law against arranging marriages or having parents or relatives assist in the mate selection process. Semi-arranged marriages. Most likely, there are people from some cultures or religious cults that have arranged marriages in the United States. However, if there were only arranged marriages in our society, the entire concept of free choice, as we know it, would be changed. It is very different to choose to have a marriage arranged for you, as opposed to having an arranged marriage more or less forced on you. Thus, as can be seen from the above lists, there are both functional and dysfunctional components in the Western method of mate selection. The same is also true for a system that consists exclusively or primarily of arranged marriages, which limits free choice. In our society, the concept of free choice is highly valued. I believe a system that is strictly based on arranged marriages would never work in Western society. It would violate our value of free choice. However, there are societies where such a system has worked in a highly functional way for hundreds of years. Such societies have norms, values, and environmental conditions that are different from ours, which makes arranged marriages functional for them. Question: are there other alternatives? The answer to this question is discussed in the next paragraph. Polygyny is a type of polygamy, which is a man who has more than one wife. This is acceptable in some societies. Polygyny might be functional in some societies when there are more females than males, which often results from males dying in war. Polygyny is especially functional in some societies for wealthy men, who can afford to support a number of wives. This method would generally not work in our society. It violates our basic norm of monogamy and it is illegal. However, there are some males who have a number of female partners in our society. This is even the case with certain religious cults, such as some segments of the Mormon cult, who believe that having multiple wives is an acceptable form of marriage. Polyandry is a type of polygamy in which a woman has multiple husbands. This is acceptable in some societies. Something similar exists in a very small scale, for some young women in our society that have a number of boyfriends. However, multiple sexual relationships of any type violate the basic values of our society. Thus, polyandry would not generally work in Western society. Question: is there any method of mate selection that would work better, in Western society, than the current method? I believe a better method can be created by slightly modifying the current system we have in our society. Such a method, perhaps, would be more or less the same basic system that we have now, with some modifications added. Some of the dysfunctional elements can probably be greatly reduced. Divorce, out-of-wedlock pregnancy, and many other problems can probably be reduced by education, counseling, and closer supervision by parents. Parent-child relationships. The phrase parent-child relationships includes natural and surrogate parents, as the concept is used here. With parent-child relationships, there is also a bonding that is in certain ways similar to the imprinting that takes place in certain animals. I am calling this parent-child imprinting. Of course, there are major differences between animal imprinting and parent-child imprinting. Obviously, the differences are partly the result of the powerful human brain and practically no inborn instincts are involved with humans. The parent-child imprinting starts at birth. First, the parent is imprinted to care for the child. The child has little awareness of who is the parent in the first hours of birth. However, the child becomes quickly imprinted toward its mother in a matter of months. This bond usually strengthens with time and then may start to decline in adolescence. However, the bonds between parents and offspring usually remain relatively strong throughout life. The strength of the parent-child imprinting can be seen when young children are separated from their parents for a period of days, weeks, or months. The young child may suffer emotional problems and beg to see its parents. This can even be the case if the child was taken out of a destructive household by court order. Thus, such bonds are not necessarily rooted in rational thinking or a simple reward-punishment concept. The child can perceive more punishment with his parents, but in spite of the pain, the child may still want its parents. Such parents might also be greatly upset about having their child taken from them, even though they were hostile toward their child and were unable to care for it. Usually, but probably not always, the child imprinting is stronger toward the mother than the father. This might be because in American society the child usually spends more time with its mother. Relationships of a personal friendship nature friendships develop as a result of interactions of a friendly nature over time. This results in the individuals learning about each other and emotional bonds often develop. This process can be called friendship imprinting. People that are likely to interact together in a friendly way over a period of time are more likely to become friends. Often such relationships develop as a result of common interests or needs that can be better satisfied with a friend. In childhood, friends serve as playmates. In adolescence and early adult life and beyond, friendships can help in the mate selection process. People often seek same-sexed friends to search in a team-like fashion for dates. This provides added security and assists in starting conversations with members of the opposite sex. Often the most outgoing member may start the conversation and the less outgoing members may join in. A primary function served by friends throughout life relates to the learning that takes place in the socialization process. We learn a considerable quantity of practical information from our friends, such as social skills, norms, values, what are realistic expectations in relation to various life endeavors, etc. We may also learn about ourselves from our friends. That is, the feedback we obtain can give us important personal information about ourselves. Of course, friends often give information or feedback that is distorted by their personal perceptions, but on the average what we learn from our friends is quite valuable. The power dynamics in relationships. People in any type of relationship in a certain sense have power over each other. This applies to all types of relationships according to the model I am presenting here, including friendships, marriage, boyfriend-girlfriend and parent-child relationships. The power that I am talking about in this text is basically social power within a relationship. Social power is defined in the glossary of Taylor's Social Psychology as follows. Social power. This refers to one person's ability to influence deliberately the behavior, thoughts or feelings of another person. I will call this type of power, when it applies to the individuals in a relationship, relationship power. There are three components that are important for relationship power, which are social norms, relative resources, and the principle of least interest. These three factors are discussed in the following six paragraphs. Social norms. Social norms are rules that relate to the standards of behavior that are expected of us by the social groups we interact in. These rules norms often relate to our role in the social group. We generally learn these rules in the socialization process. There are norms that relate to power, which generally depend on the role of the individual. For example, a student is expected to follow orders from his instructor while he or she is in class, an employee is expected to take orders from his employer, children are expected to be influenced and obey their parents. Traditionally, girlfriends and wives are expected to follow the lead of their boyfriends or husbands. This norm has generally changed, where the expectation is usually but not always more of an equal sharing of relationship power. Problems that can develop from power stemming from social norms. Problems can result when people in a relationship do not share the same norms about power. For example, an individual in the late teens, living with parents, might believe that he or she does not have to follow the orders of parents. However, the teenager's parents might believe that a teenager that is living in their house must follow their rules. Another example can be seen when a husband has traditional beliefs about masculine authority in marriage, and the wife has a modern view of equal power. The husband might view his wife as disobedient and rebellious. The wife may see her husband as inappropriately bossy. This, of course, would most likely lead to conflict. Relative resources. Relative resources is relationship power based on the possession of additional, more or better resources. That is, one of the relationship partners has a greater quality or quantity of resources, which are valued by both partners. For example, a teenager living with his parents may have less power, because his parents own the house, furnishings, and have money, which is made available to the teenager. The teenager is probably aware that his parents can cut his allowance, and even evict him from their house if he does not obey at least some of their orders. Another example is a man who provides all of the financial support for his wife. This power advantage would be especially true if the couple has no children, and the wife has no intention of working. The husband may feel especially powerful if he has traditional values, and the woman may feel vulnerable to his power if she feels that she cannot support herself at the same level that her husband provides. Problems that can develop from power stemming from relative resources. Problems can result from relationship power stemming from relative resources, if resentment and rebellious behavior results from the power difference. This can lead to arguments threatening to cut off resources, such as a parent threatening to cut the allowance of their teenager if he or she does not follow their wishes. A woman who is supported by her husband can result in conflict and worry that is very similar to the scenario presented in the above example involving the teenager. Such conflict can cause the less powerful person to worry about the possibility of having resources cut off by the more powerful person. The principle of least interest. This is relationship power stemming from the relative interest of the individuals involved in a relationship. The person that is least interested in maintaining the relationship has more of this type of power. That is, the person who cares most about maintaining the relationship will have less power. The idea behind this type of power is that the individual who is most concerned about maintaining the relationship will be willing to comply more with the other partner's demands, desires and needs in an effort to maintain the relationship. The individual that is less concerned about maintaining the relationship will be less willing to comply with the demands, desires and needs of the more interested partner. Often the less interested partner believes he or she has more and better choices for a relationship partner than the partner that is more interested in maintaining the relationship. For example, a highly attractive woman with many above average qualities will have more power than her boyfriend, if the man is homely with average qualities. The reason for this, according to the theory, is the more attractive woman would have many more choices available to her in relation to mate selection than her homely boyfriend. In addition, she could most likely attract men with qualities that are above average, but the homely man may have difficulty attracting average women. The man knows he probably cannot find a more desirable mate, but the woman knows she can most likely find a more desirable mate with relative ease. Thus, the man will be more interested in maintaining the relationship than the woman. Note the concept presented above, the principle of least interest, is intuitively known by many single people. Sometimes single individuals attempt to use this principle to gain more control in a relationship by pretending that they are not particularly interested in their boyfriends or girlfriends. They may try to convey to their partner that they have many other desirable choices for a mate. Whether such strategy actually works is another question. The goal is to try to motivate the partner to invest more effort to maintain the relationship. Of course, it can have the opposite effect. The partner may decide to abandon the relationship and find a boyfriend or girlfriend that is more interested in him or her. End of note. Problems that can develop from power stemming from the principle of least interest. When two people are in a relationship where there is a significant difference in interest in maintaining the relationship, many problems can develop. The more interested person can be investing a tremendous effort to maintain a relationship that is not likely to last. This can lead to worry, frustration, hostility and conflict, which can facilitate the process of ending the relationship. Of course, a relationship that is moderately out of balance with respect to this type of power may last. The three types of relationship power. In actual practice, the three types of power may work together. Thus, if one partner has more of one type of relationship power, it might be balanced by a different type of relationship power that is possessed by the other partner. For example, a partner who has much power as a result of the principle of least interest may have less power as a result of social norms and/or relative resources. That is, the other partner in the relationship may have substantially more power as a result of social norms and/or relative resources, which could balance the power the other partner has. Question: can you think of any relationships in which concerns for power do not play a role? According to the model I presented above, power is involved in all relationships. However, in some relationships the partners may not be aware and or concerned about power. Such relationships might be quite equal in power. In addition, there are partners in certain relationships who simply do not make any obvious attempts to exercise their power. Their influence and control of the relationship is done in a discreet and non-threatening manner. Of course, there are relationships that are at the opposite extreme, where the partners are quite aware of the power balance in the relationship. In some relationships, power is exercised in an obvious and threatening way, such as a parent threatening their child with physical punishment and/or reduction in allowance, if demands are not complied with. Research into power in relationships. There has been some research carried out on power in relationships, which is presented in Taylor's Social Psychology. Most of the research in this area involves marriage or dating couples. The majority of American married couples, 64%, in a survey of 3,000 couples, conducted by Blumstein and Schwartz in 1983, describe their marriage as more or less equal in power. However, some couples, 27%, describe their marriages as dominated by the male. A minority, 9%, of the couples describe their marriage as dominated by the female. A similar survey on single dating couples in college was conducted by Petwell in 1984. The survey indicated 49% of women thought their relationships were equal. However, a slightly lower figure of 42% of the men reported equal power. When the relationships were not equal, the male had more power according to the survey. Attraction, liking and disliking. Question: what factors make a person attractive and likable, and what factors make a person unlikable? We learn from childhood throughout life that certain traits in human beings are rewarding, other traits are more or less neutral, and some traits are likely to lead to unpleasant experiences. Thus, we tend to be attracted and like people with certain traits and dislike people with other traits. That is, certain traits' positive qualities tend to motivate people to affiliate with an individual. Such traits may motivate people to attempt to form close personal relationships with the individual with the positive qualities. Other traits tend to lead to disliking and motivate us to avoid affiliating with an individual with the undesirable qualities. Positive, neutral and negative traits are delineated in the three lists presented below. The traits people like in others are generally all of the following. Honesty. Exceptions to this might include honesty that is insulting, such as telling someone that you see them as ugly. Another exception might be honesty that results in revealing the personal secrets of family, romantic partners, friends and associates to others. Understanding. People often like when their actions, motivations and weaknesses are comprehended and accepted sympathetically by others. However, a simple comprehension of the above by an individual, without acceptance, would probably not lead to liking. That is, if someone understands our actions, motivations and weaknesses and does not accept them, we probably would not like that person. Loyalty. There might be exceptions to this. People certainly like others to be loyal to them. However, most people do not like the idea if the loyalty is to another individual at their expense. Intelligence. An exception to this might be when the higher level of intelligence results in attitudes, behavior, goals, and views that are different from the less intelligent people. In such cases, the more intelligent individual may be disliked by the less intelligent people in his or her environment and vice versa. Dependable people certainly like others they can depend on. This liking can be both of a practical and emotional nature. That is, a dependable person is a valuable entity to have around, especially in emergencies. A dependable person can also be emotionally reassuring. Considerate people probably like this trait because it is practical and emotionally reassuring. That is, you will be treated better if you are around considerate people, which can also be emotionally rewarding. Warmth. This trait is perhaps hard to define, because people may have slightly different definitions for the word warmth. The concept is delineated in Taylor's social psychology as follows. People appear warm when they like things, praise them, and approve of them. In other words, when they have a positive attitude toward people and things. My perception of the concept is a person that is positive, personal, friendly, sympathetic, kind, understanding and accepting of others. Warmth is projected to others when the above traits become apparent to people. This projection is often accompanied by reinforcing body language, such as a friendly smile and appropriate eye contact. A person that is expressing warmth does not exhibit hostility or convey rejection. He or she appears to accept an individual with his or her negative traits. Such a person would not appear to be hostile or highly critical toward the deficiencies of others. Friendly. This probably results in liking because people like to be accepted by others. A person with a friendly attitude will generally give the impression that he or she is accepting of others. The friendliness will also convey the impression that people in the company of the friendly person are liked. This will be rewarding to others, which should facilitate liking of the friendly person. Happy. One of the reasons this might facilitate liking is it might make others happy. That is, happiness often acts as if it is contagious. Humorous. There might be some exceptions to this. Certain humorous verbalizations, mannerisms, and attitudes can be insulting to some people. A humorous perspective of a young person might be insulting to a more mature person with a serious attitude. Older people with a humorous attitude about certain aspects of life might be considered immature or maladjusted by their peers. Thus, usually a humorous person must come across to others in a manner that is considered appropriate for the psychological, social and cultural circumstances for liking to result. Responsible. There might be some exceptions to this amongst some groups of individuals that are not responsible in their actions. This would probably be especially true for some rebellious delinquent groups that value a high level of risk-taking. However, even such groups would probably value an individual that is responsible in relation to their rebellious group. Physical similarities. Certain physical similarities can sometimes increase liking. Examples are similar body type, age, height, etc. Similarities in culture, values, beliefs and goals. There are probably many reasons why this facilitates liking. Some are as follows. The similarities reduce conflict, involve common knowledge that facilitates objectives. Easier to communicate as a result of using the same linguistic expressions. A reinforcement of beliefs, values and goals as a result of experiencing others who value similar beliefs, values and goals. Prolonged contact in similar cultural environments. Another set of factors that might cause individuals who are of similar culture to like each other is they may be rejected, mistreated or misunderstood by others outside of their own culture. This would certainly make people of their own culture seem more desirable. Similar interests in activities or hobbies. This facilitates positive interaction as a result of shared interests, which may require others for partners or require others for maximum satisfaction. Physical attractiveness. There are probably some exceptions where physical attractiveness does not lead to liking. Some possible examples are when it leads to jealousy between two friends of different attractiveness levels, which can happen when the friends are both competing for mates. Another exception is when an individual of lower attractiveness level believes he or she is likely to be rejected by the more attractive person. Exposure to an individual over a period of time. An important exception to this happens when the individuals are involved in conflict from the first meeting onward. In such situations, exposure over a period of time will most likely result in an increase in hostility and a greater degree of unfriendliness. Exposure to an individual over time is most likely to lead to liking when the encounters are pleasant or constructive. The traits people generally dislike in others are all of the following. Ill-mannered. An exception to this might be with some people who have similar ill-mannered behavior patterns. That is, some individuals in this category might not mind ill-mannered behavior that is similar to theirs. Unfriendly. Most people would certainly not like this trait. However, many of us would prefer that certain people, such as the neighborhood derelict, would be unfriendly, in the sense of not trying to be our friend. Hostile. Hostility can be quite unpleasant and threatening. One of the reasons for this is it is not always easy to determine the extent or actions that will follow from the hostility. Loudmouthed. An exception to this might be with some people who have similar loudmouth verbal habits. That is, some people in this category might not mind this unpleasant habit. Selfish. This trait is obviously unpleasant for many reasons. The trait can convey unfriendliness and hostility. Narrow-minded. An individual with this trait can be perceived by others as stubborn and or unwilling to listen and learn about new ideas. Conceited. This trait would be especially annoying to others when the conceit also puts others in an inferior position. However, it would probably be tolerated more if it does not make others feel inferior. Insincere. This trait relates to being dishonest about one's feelings and intentions. The trait can be a significant problem for an individual who has an insincere partner in a romantic relationship. Unkind. Such a person may be perceived by others as selfish and insensitive to the needs of others. Malicious. This trait relates to an individual with hateful feelings, which may result in vicious behavior. Certainly, it is obvious why people generally do not like others with this trait. However, malicious people with similar malicious attitudes, such as certain juvenile gangs, might like each other as long as the maliciousness is focused on people outside of the group. Obnoxious. This trait relates to unpleasant, disgusting or annoying behavior, which is unnecessary. Dishonest. A dishonest individual can be a great burden to people, especially if the dishonesty is associated with factors that are significant to others, such as stealing. If the dishonesty has no practical significance, such as a person that lies about his or her past, the dishonesty may be tolerated by others, even if they are aware that the individual is lying. Of course, this may still increase the level of disliking. Cruel. A person that has this trait will be considered mean and potentially destructive to the well-being of others. Exposure. Over a period of days, weeks, months or years to one or more individuals in an unfriendly conflict situation, such interactions are likely to lead to disliking as time passes. However, under some conditions, such interactions can result in resolving or reducing the conflict, which can result in a decrease in the level of disliking. Such reduction in conflict can even sometimes lead to cooperation and liking. All of the above is easily seen in international conflict. The following traits can generally be perceived as slightly positive to slightly negative. The perception depends on various factors, such as the psychological, social, and cultural context. Persistent. This would probably be considered a positive trait by most people when it relates to obtaining an important goal. It would probably be perceived as negative by most people when the persistent effort relates to a goal that is destructive, such as a persistent drug addict who does just about anything to obtain money for his drugs. It will also most likely be perceived as negative when it is annoying, such as a salesman that is persistent in trying to sell you items that you are not interested in. A general example is when a person is persistent in trying to persuade you to do something you do not want to do. Conventional. This trait would probably be more often considered positive by conservative people and older individuals. The trait would probably also be considered positive when the conventional behavior relates to behavior that is considered proper by society. The trait would probably be considered negative by radical groups and some young people. The trait would probably be considered negative by many adolescents and people in their early 20s when it relates to conventional styles of dress and behavior that are out of style in the adolescent peer group. Boldness trait would probably be considered positive when it is associated with behavior that is considered necessary or constructive. The trait would probably be considered negative when it is associated with behavior that is unnecessary, destructive, or annoying. Cautious. This trait would be considered positive by many mature adults. It would be considered especially positive by most people when the cautiousness is clearly related to avoiding a hazard that is obvious, serious, and highly unnecessary. It would probably be considered less positive or negative when the cautiousness is related to avoiding a hazard that is not obvious or not serious. Also, it would probably be considered somewhat negative by many people when it relates to avoiding risks that are commonly accepted by our society, such as driving an automobile, drinking alcoholic beverages, etc. It would be considered negative by most people when the cautiousness is related to avoiding imaginary or insignificant risks. Many young people would consider cautiousness a negative trait when it relates to avoiding the risks commonly taken by the peer groups of teenagers and people in their early 20s. These groups often consider risk-taking a desirable quality, which is the opposite of cautiousness. People in these groups often are faced with situations that demand risk-taking. This includes social risk-taking, and in the military, young people are expected to risk their lives. Some groups of young people often advocate the opposite of cautiousness when it relates to cigarette smoking, drinking alcoholic beverages, driving an automobile, and rebellious activities that can sometimes be illegal. Excitable. Probably most people, especially teenagers and young adults, would consider this trait positive when the excitability relates to behavior that they consider to be harmless and fun. When the excitability relates to unpleasant, destructive, abnormal, or highly inappropriate behavior, most people would consider it negative. Quiet. This trait would probably be considered positive when the quietness is associated with not being annoyed by an individual that could be potentially annoying. Also, quietness can be associated with a calm, non-aggressive, and polite person, which would be considered positive by most people. This trait may be considered negative by many when it is believed to be motivated by social anxiety and lack of social skills. Impulsive. This trait may be considered positive by some people when the impulsiveness is related to frivolous behavior in an environment where such behavior is considered appropriate. The trait might be considered more positive by individuals that are young and impulsive. The trait will probably be considered negative by most mature people in the work and school environments. The trait would also probably be considered negative by most people if the impulsive behavior relates to serious actions, decisions, or if it involves destructive behavior. Aggressive. This trait may be considered positive when it relates to competitive behavior that is considered appropriate, such as an aggressive executive or salesman who is more successful than his or her competitors. However, this trait is likely to be considered negative when it relates to embarrassing, inappropriate, harmful, or illegal behavior. Shy. This trait might be considered positive by some people when it is associated with a sensitivity to the feelings of others. That is, a shy person may be considered reserved because he or she does not want to offend, embarrass, or annoy others. As a result, such a person is cautious with their verbalizations and actions. They come across to others as quiet, very polite, and kind. They are probably less likely to interrupt or get into arguments with others. All of the above is certainly positive. However, shyness can be considered quite negative when it is associated with social anxiety and lack of social skills. In its extreme form, some people will consider it a mental illness. Emotional. This trait may be considered positive by some people when it relates to pleasant emotions, such as happiness, laughter, and romantic passion. This is especially the case if the emotions are considered appropriate for the situation. The trait will be considered negative when it relates to undesirable or inappropriate emotional responses. Naive. This trait may be considered positive when it is associated with innocence. This is especially the case with children and teenagers. The trait implies in such cases that the individual did not have certain experiences that might corrupt his or her moral behavior. Naiveness implies that the individual did not engage in certain moral behavior because he or she is ignorant of such behavior. The trait can be considered negative when the ignorance of immoral behavior results in the naive individual being swindled or mistreated by immoral people. In such cases, the naive individual may be considered stupid, which is certainly a negative trait. Daydreamer. This trait can be considered positive when it is associated with constructive daydreaming, such as performed by a poet, writer, and scientist. The trait may also be considered somewhat positive by some people when the daydreaming is interesting and or fun to talk about. The trait may be considered negative by most people when it is used to escape from responsibilities, unpleasant work activities, academic study, or an unpleasant situation that must be faced to resolve it. Materialistic. This trait might be considered positive by some people, because we do live in a society that is in a sense quite materialistic. The trait may be associated with an individual that is trying to obtain a high degree of financial success. In our society, this is certainly considered positive by most people if the financial success is obtained through hard work and honest effort. However, a materialistic person can be evaluated quite negatively when the effort to obtain material resources and money is not through hard work and an honest effort. For example, a woman who is trying to obtain wealth by searching for a rich man may be evaluated quite negatively. She would most likely be evaluated negatively by men in her own social class, which she rejects because they do not possess wealth. Such a woman would be called a gold digger. Materialistic attitudes and behavior would also most likely be considered negative by many spiritual and intellectual individuals that focus their efforts on the non-material aspects of life. Rebellious. The trait might be considered positive by many liberal Americans when the rebellious attitudes and behavior are controlled, legal, and focused on major dysfunctions in our society. This trait might be considered positive by some adolescents and young adults who focus their rebellious attitudes toward dysfunctional components of society. The rebellious attitudes may also be considered positive by some juvenile gangs. The trait would probably be considered quite negative by most adults in our society when the rebellious attitudes and behavior are not controlled, illegal, and are not focused on factors that they perceive as dysfunctions. The negative assessment of the trait would probably be voiced most strongly by individuals that are conservatives in their political views. Lonely. This trait probably would not be considered positive by most people. However, many people in our society would not negatively evaluate a lonely person. The loneliness could easily be attributed to the structure of our society, rather than a deficiency in the lonely person. A lonely individual might even be perceived as an individual that is friendly and willing to make social contact with any appropriate individual. Such a friendly attitude could certainly be evaluated positively by most individuals. However, the trait may be considered negative when the loneliness is attributed to inadequacies in the individual. This negative evaluation may be especially prominent when the lonely person is perceived to be rejecting and unfriendly to most people. Dependent. The trait may be perceived as neutral or even positive by some individuals when the dependency is appropriate according to the norms of our society. For example, a young college student who is still dependent on his or her parents will probably not be evaluated negatively. A woman who is taking care of children and is dependent on her husband for support will also not be evaluated negatively by most people. However, when the dependency is inappropriate according to the norms of our society, the trait would probably be evaluated negatively by most people. For example, an unemployed adult that is not in school and is still depending on his or her parents for support will probably be evaluated negatively by most people. The essence of the list can be summed up as follows. Individuals that provide the maximum amount of reward at the lowest possible cost will probably be liked the most. The word cost means here the undesirable obligations and experiences that individuals might inadvertently or intentionally impose on the people they interact with. The individuals that display values, beliefs, goals, and behavior patterns that do not contradict the views of the people they affiliate with will be liked more than individuals that do otherwise. individuals that avoid conflict and get to know the people they interact with over an extended period of time will be liked more than individuals that do otherwise.